my mom, she kept everything.
Well, that's great that she did, yeah. though. Now, what is that?
Now, that you wore on your jacket there. That,
okay, now, well, I'm not making sense of this. What is it?
Well, it's a dragon.
Oh, a dragon?
That's what our squadron looked like there. And, of course, I wore this on the back of my jacket, too. I told them I was American.
Oh, okay, the American flag.
Yeah.
All leather.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
Well, there was one that we picked apart there. The nose wheel went down on him, and there that when he did that, they just scrapped him out there.
Mm-hmm. And this is something you also wore on your jacket?
Yeah, that I wore that on the sleeve there.
Okay, and what is this symbol? This is...
Well, that's Chinese nationalist.
Okay,
symbol.
And this is
star.
The star.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess that's right. You would have had to have some...
There was a picture of me getting my medals there,
mm-hmm.
down there in Amarillo, Texas. There.
Oh, I see, and you've got this on
you. I'm going to show you what embarrassed my mama.
Okay.
And I was in India.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And I was in India.
Uh-huh.
I come across that, you know, and of course, Indians take their bones, you know.
Yeah.
Take the bones and carve everything. That was all hand carved.
Uh-huh.
And so I sent it home to Mom. I sent it home. She made a dress for it.
Well, okay. That's great.
I got a home, she has
it. Well, she wanted to display it because you sent it to her.
Yeah.
On the other hand, she didn't want a naked woman there.
No, there's a Chinese cigarette case.
Okay.
And, oh boy.
Now, what kind of cigarettes would you have been able to buy, like Lucky Strike or?
Oh, any of them, you know, any of them. They had them in the PX there.
Okay, all right.
And we smoked American. Back in 1974, I quit smoking anything.
Right.
But,
okay, well, these photographs are great.
Okay.
Maybe if I come back to visit with you, we can, you know, go through them.
Oh, anytime.
And, you know, someone might want some copies of these,
yeah.
too. If they contact you, that would be possible, you say. Okay.
Now this, of course, see, I was trying my best to be a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us what they call a pilot log.
Oh.
And so I kept track of it. And how many planes you flew, the hours you flew, but then I flunked out.
Did I see that?
Yeah, heading for the depot. That's the last part. I was out of it. Yeah, I tell you what, what the problem was, they assigned 5 students to each instructor pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't make it through, or he didn't think you're going to be good enough, or he'd flunk you out.
Mm-hmm.
And I scared the living tar out of him.
Yeah.
And so he flunked me out.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next day, the lieutenant pilot took me out. He says, "You can fly this plane anywhere." I said, "Sure I can. I can fly it anywhere you want." And so he says, "Well, just land." He says, "Just take it off and fly it around."
Mm-hmm.
So I took that old PT-19 up, flew her around the countryside, landed her back down again, taxied up there, you know. And he says, "You can fly this thing all over the place." But he found out when the instructor flucked me out, I had too many dangerous tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
I was through.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway,
do you know why you had those dangerous tendencies?
Oh, I was a regular old, what do you call it, a country flyer?
Uh-huh.
I didn't fly by the book. That's what you had to do in the Army Air Force. You had to fly by the book,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'd have probably been dead if I'd have given me that through there, you know. Because
Okay. All
the guys that I was trying to make it through there with went to England,
mm-hmm.
flying B-24s in England. And about half of them didn't go home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
it turned out well for you.
Oh, shoot, yes.
Yeah.
That's why I'm still here out here.
Was there a particular soldier or a particular officer that you have a story about?
Not really. They all went through there. Of course, Colonel Crockett, he was there at West Point, and I still get caught a bang out of him. He never had a stick of hair on his head.
Hmm.
But he was an eager beaver.
Mm-hmm.
And so we was going to fly it all. Of course, a lot of times he flew lead mission with us.
Mm-hmm.
But
so when you went out on mission, were there normally 10 planes? Or
No. We had, actually our whole group was 34 planes.
Okay.
When we went out there. And good gosh, Friday, I got pictures, I think, on the whole group of them there somewhere. But there was a bomber. That's one of them.
Okay.
And 34, I almost always flew waste gunner lots of times on those missions.
Mm-hmm.
We bombed about every target there was. Because, like I say, we was clear over in the off of the Himalayan mountain side of China, and the Japanese were all over here. They come down the Yangtze River, you know,
right.
And they was 3/4 of China that the Japanese were never in.
Mm-hmm. What kind of targets did you have?
Well, warehouses, like I say, that we bombed a dry dock there in Hong Kong, the Japanese dry dock in an old area. We bombed that there, and we hit that pretty good there. Like I say, we gave the Japanese quite a bit of trouble there from our bases.
So you felt what you were doing was contributed to winning the war?
Oh, I guess. I don't know. We wasn't. We figured we were going to win the war over there, you know, just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
But so we just flying along doing our job there.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when you had completed your 35 missions, you came home, they flew you home, and then you were at Liberal for a while, and then you got out of the service in
45.
So did the training that you had received with the flying and, you know, the engineer part, did that then transfer into what you chose to do? Okay, so what did you do immediately when you got out of the
service? Well, I went home there and tried to figure out what I was going to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We sat around there, you know, and of course my brothers, they decided they was going down southwest of Weatherford, Oklahoma to the sheet metal and mechanics training down there. And so I went down with them. I didn't know what I was going to do. And my dad says, well, you got pretty good nerves and everything. Says, why don't you sign up to be a watchmaker or something? Or actually said a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I got down there and I signed up, you know, and it's a horology school. So I signed up for it. And so I went back in January there of 46. And I went in there and I asked the clerk, I says, now where am I at on this list to get into the school here? And she says, well, I don't believe I have you down here at all. I said, oh my gosh. I said, I was supposed to be down the list. Well, what I didn't know was the president of the school was standing right behind me, President Burton. He says, come on with me, young man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So was this a college?
Oh, yeah. Southwestern. Yeah, it was a regular college there.
Okay.
And
you got the GI Bill, right?
GI Bill. I went under school under the GI Bill. They gave us $375 for tools and equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Then they paid us $75 a month for room and board.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that was plenty. You ate if you ate at the mess hall and everything. If you ate at the restaurant downtown, but it's not. But anyway, but I still remember that President Burton was standing right behind me. I didn't know it. And I taught him about wanting to go to Washington Prep School, the horology school. And so he just says, well, come with me, young man. So he led me down there and went into the horology department. He told the instructor, says, find a desk for this young man.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over and got my desk, ready to go over there, man. And we were sitting there, had a few watches we was fixing up there and everything, you know. We thought we were doing great. And then I'd been there about maybe 3 months or so, and they changed the instructor, Dr. Mitchell. He retired because he's getting old, you know. And here comes this new instructor in from Elgin, Lynn Lewis. And he went around there and says, all you youngers, I want you to come in the next room in here and sit down. He says, now get your bench. We got our file. He says, take 10 penny nails and I want you to make your tools. So we were sitting there filing and making tools And what? I still got some of them. Mm. I still got some of those tools I made.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, after, I don't know, maybe 6 more weeks or something there, we got to go back in and learn about watches. But that time I knew all about watches.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had done all my training on wind-up watches, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That these quartz watches, that's all Greek to me.
Right.
And
so how long did it take you to complete that course?
16 months.
16 months.
I was waiting 16 months. And then I went to work for Thomas Jewelers there in Fredonia there, you know. And then I heard my brother out there, he's out here at Cimarron. Because I tell you what, well, summertime we had plenty of watches to fix there at Thomas Jewelers. But wintertime, where everything kind of went kaplooey.
Mm-hmm.
So I started headed out there. And first I went to Jetmore, and I didn't like it there.
Mm-hmm.
And a firecracker salesman come in. He says, you know, he says, there's a guy down in Wichita in Cimarron. Says he'd sure like to have a watchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I come out there to Clark's Pharmacy. And they said, oh, you got a little watchmaker up here. Ralph Clark says, he don't know. So he set me down in there, you know, behind my little space there. And I was in Clark's down here for 35 years.
And what year was it that you came to Cimarron?
48.
48, okay.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And 35 years I was in Clark's Pharmacy mm-hmm. there.
Now, yeah. Did you work on clocks and watches?
Oh, yeah, I'd work on anything. Most of the time I worked on watches. Then I moved across the street there. We moved across the street because we wanted to sell handmade stuff. So we moved across there. And my wife was in there with me. So we were selling this stuff at the handmade. My wife, she's a real good craftsman, too. But then we were selling the craft stuff people made, you know, and brought in for us to sell.
Mm-hmm.
That went on and down. Well, things didn't go very good down there with mm-hmm. the gal that owns the building now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I finally got out of there. I went over to my daughter's house over here, 205. And that's where all my equipment still is down
okay.
there, you know. And that's where I faced up out there.
Mm-hmm. So when you had to make your tools, you made them out of the 10-penny nails?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Why did he have you do that? Do you know?
So we knew exactly what was going on.
Okay, and what would the tools, did they have particular names?
Well, no, not necessarily. Well, screwdrivers and stuff like that, you know.
Okay.
And little deals you could open, lift up your hands off of your watches and stuff, you know, there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you know, there. And like I say, all my training was on wind-up watches.
Mm-hmm.
So actually my business really left me. Because
mm-hmm.
Now you don't find any wind-up watches and even the quartz watches. Well, I bought my wife, the watch my wife wears right now. I had a man for it. I gave $4.75 for that watch.
Mm-hmm.
Made in China. Damn many Christmas. Poor Chinaman. I feel sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we'll come back to after the war, but I have a couple other questions
okay.
that I need to ask you
okay.
about the war.
Right.
Okay, so how do you think your experience changed you, or what effect did it have on you?
Oh, probably aged me, made me an adult, I think. There.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was a little boy when I went in. And I come out pretty well man, you know,
mm-hmm.
there. It made a man out of me.
Okay. Because, I mean, just
well, the age and everything, you know, there.
Mm-hmm.
And your experiences and everything, you know. And like I said, that when I went in, I was just a little old 19-year-old boy. Didn't know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they attacked Pearl Harbor, I didn't know where Pearl Harbor was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found out there. But mm-hmm. Everybody knew that when they attacked Pearl Harbor, if you was physical, you was going to be in the service
mm-hmm.
there.
Did it change your view of the world, or did it enlarge your world?
Oh, I think so there, you know. I wasn't mad at anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't mad at anybody there, you know. And so we just had to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
That was just more of a job than anything else there. And then we flew our missions, and I'd shoot at the Japanese, zero, you know, there. But I didn't really hate him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate it. In fact, I seen one going down, and I seen that poor old guy crash into the ground. That shot him down, I guess, there. And I seen him crash. Oh, son of a gun. Mm-hmm. He's dead.
Yeah. Were the Japanese good pilots?
Well, some of them were. Mm-hmm. Now, the ones that attacked Pearl Harbor, they were really good. Mm-hmm. You know, but later on, while they run out of first-string pilots, mm-hmm. and all of theirs, was even the ones that were taking off their aircraft carriers later on, were not the greatest. Our P-40s and P-51s is just shooting down right and left mm-hmm. there. So the ones that attacked Pearl Harbor were the good ones. But they didn't have enough trained ones, you know. Later on, they run out of pilots. Because mm-hmm. they wasn't training them fast enough or anything, you know. Okay. And, of course, even at the end of the war, they had a kamikaze pilot. They'd give them as much as 5 hours training, get in a plane with a bomb and send them over there and try to attack our fleet. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I was already home then.
Right. So when you came home, before you got out, did you keep up with the war news by
reading? Oh, sure.
Reading the newspaper? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Were your brothers home when you?
No. I never saw any of my brothers until after the war was over. We got home there, you know. But anyway, no, my brothers were all scattered all over the world. Of course, I got home, my younger brother, Dwight, and his sister, they were still home because mm-hmm. they didn't graduate until after World War II was over with.
Okay. And when you and your brothers sat down, and did you talk about the war and the experiences?
Yeah. But my brother Ron, you know, and of course Wayne, he never had world experiences. Clayton, he likes to talk about the over there and the Japanese over there in the island. He still does. Mm-hmm. He's like me, likes to talk. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we talked about it some, but not much. My mom was glad to see us all. Mm-hmm. She, boy, I'll tell you what, she sweated it out during World War II.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and wasn't it after Pearl Harbor that they maybe changed that rule about families?
Well, I don't know. You mean how many could be in the service?
Right.
I don't know. It must have been there. Yeah, I know all these family brothers were killed, all these destroyers out mm-hmm. there, cruisers down there, South Pacific. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what their name was now, but anyway.
The Sullivans.
Sullivan brothers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we was all in the service by then there, so mm-hmm. we knew that. But we really didn't have much of a ruling about that I knew of there, so. But anyway, we was all scattered around there, so mm-hmm. we was in for the duration.
Okay. When you look back at that experience, now from, you know, how many years perspective, is there anything else that you would want to say or describe?
Oh, I don't know. I was sure glad to get out. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to sign up for the reserve, and I didn't want any part of it then.
Mm-hmm. What would that have meant to sign up for the reserve?
Well, that meant they could call you if they want you.
Okay.
And they still got the reserves now, you know, even now.
Right.
I got a grandson that's in the Marine Reserves, and I'm worried about him going to Iraq, but he hasn't been called up yet. So, so anyway, he's the only one of the family that's in the service now.
Was there a tradition in your family? Was your father in the service?
Oh, yeah. He's World War I.
Okay, and did he ever talk about that war?
Oh, not a lot. Now, he never carried a gun.
Okay.
He was in the hospital, ambulance crew, mm-hmm. and all they did was pick up the wounded and get them to the hospital in their old wagon, you know, mm-hmm. Horse-drawn wagon they had there. And that's what he did all during World War II. But he's a handsome son of a gun, boy. Mm-hmm. I had pictures of him right there someplace, but. He was a handsome son again, and my mother was a little school teacher, and boy, he caught her. She fell for him.
In Fredonia?
In Fredonia, there. She taught school outside of Fredonia there, and but anyway, they got married. My mom stuck with him.
Well, did he farm or?
No. When they married, for years he worked at the West Brickyard there. But both brickyards in Fredonia closed down. Mm-hmm. They're making them so. And then, oh man, I remember several times that us kids didn't know what was going on. But he was walking straight and probably worked on WPA. He had a team of mules. He had a team of gray mules, I remember. I remember he'd go out there and get his wagon out, strap close and drive all the way 10 miles and haul gravel.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, for the... You know, yeah, he got those mules going there. Yeah, he worked quite a while. Of course, he worked for a long time as in the linseed oil mill there. And you talk about a rough deal. That was rough. They had these guys working on them in the shorts. It was hot.
Hmm.
And they had these presses. And they'd press this linseed oil mill out of the presses. Of course, they got it all different deal. You can do it real easy.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he worked in there for quite a while. I still remember my mom driving me down the old Model E. Says, "You go in and get Dad's check." Of course, Dad, I had to go get the foreman, you know. I had to carry these checks around. And so I went in there, and he gave me the check, you know, for a week's work, $21.80.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about linseed oil. It comes from a plant?
Flax.
Flax, and
yeah.
That was grown around Fredonia?
Well, yeah, grown around Fredonia there, different places. Hauled it in there, and they would press it out and put it in these tank cars, and made linseed oil makes a lot of paint, you know.
Right.
You know, paint.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what they made.
Okay.
And then, of course, later on, they went to soybean, you know. That's what they, in fact, I think still processing soybeans there.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, at Fredonia, had this cement plant out there, you know, and it's still going out there, you know.
What do you remember about the Depression or the Dirty 30s?
Oh, man, not much. Because us kids, we didn't know. I remember going to second grade, and Roosevelt was elected there. And Roosevelt's going to save us all. Roosevelt didn't save nobody. And finally, the Depression went right on until World War II, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, World War II was really the end of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
We just went away in debt to get it over. But that's when the Depression ended, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is one other question going back to when you were in the service. Was religion a part of being in the service?
Oh, not really. We had our chaplains. But it didn't make any difference what chaplain,
mm-hmm.
what his religion was. He come out and held his service.
Mm-hmm.
And your Catholic chaplains, they held service for Christians, you know, just the same as Catholics, you know. There. Mm-hmm. So it didn't make no difference.
Okay.
There.
Okay. When you were in the service, were you politically, were you interested in politics?
Oh!
Did you know the news of the nation?
Well, I remember I voted for Roosevelt that last time I voted for a Democrat president.
But you didn't vote for Harry Truman?
No, I didn't vote for Harry Truman, but he won anyhow. But, first president I ever remember that was really, the one I liked was Eisenhower. Eisenhower was one of the best presidents we ever had.
And why did you think he was?
Because he had such savvy,
mm-hmm.
smart.
Okay.
So he established interstate highways.
I know.
And there were things like that, you know, that, he was what you call a brilliant thinker, but he was a deep thinker. Of course,
mm-hmm.
he was over there, helped us win World War II and everything, you know. I think Eisenhower was one of the greatest men that ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
Because.
Do you want to comment on presidents since Eisenhower?
Oh, no, I'm still glad we got the one we got.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about when you came to Cimarron. What was Cimarron like then?
Oh, maybe a little smaller than it is now.
Okay.
And, I come out here. I really come out here, and my brother was out here. And there was an old house, big old house, down here by Presto, where Presto is now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big old house there. And I owned with this old lady, the Egbert. And I had a room up there, you know, and I stayed up in there. And then They had this dance at the VFW dance that opened up this building down there where the training center is now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in there and I was sitting there and I saw this pretty little gal sitting up there. I said, doggone. I said, I say she's a pretty little gal. And I went up and introduced me. I walked her home. We've been going ever since.
So she was from Cimarron then?
Well, no, actually, she wasn't. She was from Wichita. Okay. Wichita gal there. And we got married at Wichita Church. There's a little old church there in Wichita that tornado tore down in 98. Tore it down there. Little Methodist church there in Hayesville. Outside of Hayesville. That's where we was married at there.
Okay.
And boy, I tell you what, she's been a good one.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen a lot of businesses come and go in Cimarron over the years?
Oh, yeah, several of them there. Gosh, Friday, not lately, not before, but lately, man alive, I'm surprised that. Of course, when I first moved to town here, Fisher's IGA was right down there where Clark's Pharmacy is on the other side there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the variety store was over there and everything, you know, of course. And man alive, I tell you what, this closing down these stores in Cimarron is going to bother me, but I can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I see the 84 Lumber is going to close down now. I said, good heavens, what's going on here? But I guess they got to have business, and Cimarron's too small,
mm-hmm.
you know, for too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when did you retire from repairing watches?
Oh, golly. Not very long ago.
Okay.
But see, I repaired watches for 57 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you can figure that out. You can add that up. Add to 1448. 57, you can figure it all out there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was right, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's when I said, that's enough. Well, I can say that's business left me,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you can buy a quartz watch for $4.75, well, what the heck?
Yeah. And then if it stops running, you just get a new one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Chinese were making those things. Of course, I put the watch batteries in. And I still got a box of watch batteries around this place sometime. I don't know where they are.
Did you have a favorite brand of watch that you like to work on?
Or? No, not necessarily. Never Timex. Mm-hmm. Oh, I hate working on those things.
And why?
Well, they're cheap built.
Okay.
See, that's a throwaway watch, you know. And I always hated it because I didn't want to fix them up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody started buying these Timexes because that's what ruined the watch repair businesses, these cheap throwaway watches.
And was that after World War II that the Timex?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't remember just exactly when the Timexes first started coming out, but they sure ruined the repair business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know why you chose that rather than doing what your brothers enrolled in?
Oh, not necessarily. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Okay.
So, like I said, I went down there to Weatherford, Oklahoma, Southwestern. I didn't even know they had a horology department there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was standing around trying to figure out how to do it because they were going to take a sheet metal and welding, you know, class there, or mechanics. So I didn't know what I was going to do, but I just went down with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how come I was down there.
Mm-hmm.
I went down there. I didn't have any particular idea what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So after World War II, just trying to figure out something, you know. My dad suggested I might want a dentist. And I thought about looking in people's mouths. I thought, oh no.
What though attracted you? I mean, when you work on a watch, it's very small. Thing that you're working on.
Mm-hmm. Didn't bother me.
Okay.
No, I loved it. I loved it. I have a whole set of tools and you've got your glasses. See that?
Well, so you have...